In 2014, OnePlus launched a phone that shouldn't have been possible. Top-tier specs, clean software for just $299. It wasn't just a deal, it was a movement. But today, OnePlus is barely a player. Fans are furious and the company's collapsing in its most important market. This is the wild story of how OnePlus built a cult and then destroyed it. Pete Lau walked out of Oppo in 2013 with a clear view of how big Chinese phone brands operate. He'd seen the layers of marketing, carrier deals, and retail markups. Carl Pei joined him with a different skill set: community, forums, and online hype. Together, they agreed on one simple plan: build a phone that feels like a flagship, but don't charge flagship money. A flagship is essentially tech speak for the best of the best. This meant a top Snapdragon processor, plenty of RAM, a sharp display, decent cameras, and a premium build quality. But you'd usually pay $600, $700, sometimes $800 or more. Pete and Carl looked at that and thought, hey, there's a gap. If they could deliver 80 to 90% of that experience for half the price, the tech-savvy crowd would notice fast. So in 2014, they launched the OnePlus One. On paper, it looked insane for the price. Snapdragon 801, 3GB of RAM, a 1080p display, a 13MP camera, and a huge battery. But most importantly, the base model only cost $299 and the higher storage option cost $349. This was unbelievable. But the price wasn't all that was lightweight. The OnePlus One shipped with Cyanogen OS, which gave it a near-stock Android look with extra power user features. Later, they created their own Oxygen OS, built around a simple promise: keep it light and essential. No heavy bloat, no duplicate apps for everything. For Android fans who hated cluttered interfaces, this felt like a breath of fresh air. Never settle was the slogan, and they called the phone a flagship killer. Obviously, they were undercutting a lot of big-name flagships by hundreds of dollars while offering similar performance. So, how'd they do it? They kept the whole business lean. No big retail partners, no fancy physical stores, no heavy carrier subsidies. Sales were almost entirely online, mainly through their own website. That cut channel costs and let them pour value into the device itself. But one part of their business where other brands spent millions was virtually zero. If you don't pay retailers and carriers to push your phone in-store, you need people to find you on their own. Getting people to notice is one thing, getting them to buy and stay is another, but OnePlus had virtually no marketing budget. Apple and Samsung were spending $350 million advertising their phones each, so Pete and Carl leaned into guerrilla marketing. They relied on forums, Reddit, YouTube reviews, and tech blogs to spread the word. And moving forward, software became a huge part of the pitch. The message was clear: you're getting almost everything those phones offer for far less, but you could only go so far with these forms. So Pete and Carl added something else to the mix: scarcity. You couldn't just buy a OnePlus One whenever you wanted. You needed an invite from an existing owner or from a promotion. So how would this help? If anything, it sounded annoying. Well, technically it was, but it worked. If something is limited, either due to supply or for a limited time, people feel a more urgent drive to buy it. Plus, it gave OnePlus owners the feeling that they were in a special club. You were part of a small group that got it before everyone else. They pushed this idea further with the Smash the Past campaign. 100 people got the chance to buy the phone for $1 if they filmed themselves destroying their old device. The stunt was messy and controversial, but it got coverage everywhere. As demand began to build like rising water behind the dam, OnePlus slowly relaxed the gates. More invites, then specific open sale days, then eventually full availability. The plan by the end of 2014 was to sell about 50,000 units, but they had sold about 1 million units of the OnePlus One. Their biggest markets became East Asia, Europe, and the US, exactly the regions where online communities and tech media had the loudest voice. OnePlus felt like a movement. People weren't just buying a phone or saving money, they were buying into an idea. Strong specs, fair prices, clean software, and founders who showed up on forums and answered questions, like the anti-iPhone. Choosing OnePlus over Samsung or Apple felt like taking a stand. Not to mention, the low price and good specs eventually helped OnePlus claim a giant part of the Android segment in India. For a while, the never-settle promise felt completely real. Everything was going great. But slowly, the cracks in the prestigious brand started to appear. At first, everything clicked. The formula kept working. OnePlus released the 2, the 3, the 5, and the 6. Specs climbed, designs got more premium, and the charging speeds jumped ahead of most rivals. Prices bumped up a little each time, but the value story still made sense. Oxygen OS was still fast, clean, and the phone still felt like a bargain next to Samsung and Apple. Carl Pei said, "We want to be careful that we aren't adding features simply for the sake of differentiation. We've implemented some important features thus far, but they are subtle and meaningful. That's our philosophy behind Oxygen OS. Keep it light and essential." For a lot of people, that was the real reason they picked OnePlus over a Xiaomi or a Vivo. Then came 2020, and with it, the OnePlus 8 Pro. As expected, it was exactly what fans expected from a never-settled device. Top Gear Snapdragon chip, high refresh OLED display, fast charging, wireless charging, and finally, a proper water resistance rating. It hung with the best phones of the year in almost every spec sheet comparison, but the price was a surprise to everyone. In the UK, the 8 Pro launched at £799, with a higher end model at £899. In the US, it started at $899, going up to $999. These were not half the price of a Galaxy numbers anymore. These were full flagship prices. Reviewers labeled it a Samsung killer, but you are now paying Samsung money, and when people paid Samsung money, they expect Samsung level polish. The tiny quirks that were forgivable on a $400 flagship killer suddenly looked a lot more serious on a $900 flagship. At the same time, OnePlus tried to have it both ways. In July 2020, they launched the OnePlus Nord. This was a mid-range device starting around £379, aimed at people who cared about value more than having the latest specs. But wasn't that the original idea? On the surface, it sounded fine. Keep a cheaper line while the main series moves up market. But there was a major problem with that. For years, OnePlus had one clean story: high-end experience at a lower price. But now, were they a full-price flagship brand, a mid-range value brand, both? The fans could feel the confusion right away, and the story got even stranger. Carl Pei was the public face of the brand, but in late 2020, he quietly left the company and later started another phone brand. And he wasn't alone either. Pete Lau's role changed too, yet his was a bit more complicated. He became chief product officer at Oppo while still overseeing OnePlus. So he went back to his previous job? Well, sort of. BBK Electronics, a giant Chinese conglomerate, owns Vivo as well as Oppo and OnePlus. Even though they seemed independent, and a OnePlus rep even told reporters, OnePlus and Oppo are two completely independent companies, they shared some common investors. Now, they were a proper subsidiary brand of BBK. To business leaders, this looked efficient. Combine leadership, share resources. To fans, it looked like OnePlus was getting pulled deeper into Oppo's orbit. In early 2021, that suspicion turned into a reality. OnePlus and Oppo merged their hardware R&D teams. A few months later, OnePlus announced that Oxygen OS and Oppo's Color OS would share a common code base. By September, they were talking about a single unified OS that would power future flagships. To fans, this was a warning siren. People chose OnePlus over Oppo partly because of Oxygen OS. Color OS had a reputation for being busy, full of features, and visually louder, not at all the OnePlus vibe. So when fans heard unified OS, they didn't think improvement. Oxygen OS updates began to look and feel different. Menu shifted, icons and animations leaned more towards Color OS, extra options, more visual flair, and the new settings crowded into places that used to be simple. For a new buyer coming from another Android brand, it might have seemed fine. For long OnePlus users, it felt like their clean OS was being slowly swapped out, and the rollout was loaded with problems. Users reported bugs after updates, odd camera behavior, battery drain, and small glitches in day-to-day use. None of this was unique to OnePlus, but it went against one of their biggest promises: fast and smooth. What was the point of buying OnePlus instead of Oppo or any other BBK brand? The higher prices and the less distinct software made the old flagship killer identity feel hollow. Fans were upset. OnePlus tried to calm things down. Pete Lau and other executives said the unified system would keep a clean and lightweight feel, and they explicitly promised no ads and no heavy pre-installs. But fans weren't convinced. They didn't want to see their favorite enthusiast brand drift towards the same behavior as everyone else. By early 2022, the backlash was loud enough that OnePlus quietly backed off the unified OS branding. They said global phones would stick with the Oxygen OS name even if there was shared code underneath. The turning point was complete. Prices were now full flagship. The mid-range Nord line muddied the brand's focus. The co-founder who built the community was gone. Yet, as bad as things had gotten for OnePlus, they were about to get much worse. Over the past 8 years, we've posted 1,100 videos. Yet, we still haven't crossed 1 million subscribers. We are close though, and I believe 2026 is the year. And if you subscribe right now, we can actually make that a reality. Globally, OnePlus floated around 2-3% market share. In a world dominated by Apple, Samsung, Xiaomi, and Vivo, OnePlus was a small part of that ecosystem. But there was one market where they had a stronghold: India. It accounted for more than one-third of OnePlus's business. The market where premium Android without iPhone pricing really landed. In 2023, they held around 21% of the premium Android segment there. But then came the chain reaction. It started with something called the Green Line scandal. Many users opened their phones and saw a permanent vertical green line on their screens after a software update or just after regular use. It was almost impossible to get rid of this thing. This wasn't just in India, but this set off dominoes that would ruin OnePlus's stronghold. OnePlus offered a lifetime display warranty for affected devices. Sounded good, but it actually made things worse for the retailers in India. In India, a lot of phone buying was still offline in physical stores. When a customer came back angry, the retailer ended up spending staff time troubleshooting and handling exchange or warranty paperwork. Here, warranty claims were slow, margins were already thin, and retailers were stuck doing damage control. So, the South Indian Organized Retailers Association threatened to stop selling OnePlus from May 1st, 2024, specifically citing narrow margins and delays in claim processing, because it was making retail partners' lives harder. Retailers were very annoyed at OnePlus. Selling these phones just brought more problems and often losses, so they just stopped pushing them and pushed competitors instead. Google began to move into India and went hard. The Pixel began to take off. OnePlus watched their market share nosedive in India, of Android phones from 21% in 2023 to just 6% in 2024 for OnePlus in India. Overall phone share in India dropped to just 3.9% in 2024 from 6.1% in 2023. Keep in mind, India was about one-third of their entire market. Just losing 1% in India was catastrophic for OnePlus. But there was still a chance to turn things around. OnePlus had the Model 13T coming. Compact design, advanced battery tech, and the kind of specs that tech forums were genuinely excited about. For a moment, it looked like OnePlus might remember what made them special in the first place. Then they announced where it would actually be sold: just China and a model for India. No US launch, no Europe. The two markets that built OnePlus were being told, "You're not a priority." This was insulting. Not everyone in the US or Europe wants an iPhone. There's a massive audience hungry for strong Android phones at fair prices. At the end of the day, never settle only works when you're actually offering something different. OnePlus earned its cult following by being the obvious choice for a specific buyer: flagship performance, clean software, fair pricing, without locking into Apple or Samsung's ecosystem. That promise felt real when the OnePlus One cost $299, when Oxygen OS was genuinely distinct and when Pete and Carl were answering questions in forums. But slowly over time, they pushed their phones towards iPhones and Galaxies. They started charging flagship prices, blurred Oxygen OS into Color OS, modeled their brand, and burned trust in India, their biggest market. OnePlus looked like just another BBK brand, so customers treated them exactly that way. They left. Right now, they're stuck in the middle, and that's where brands go to die. But there's still one question. Where did Carl Pei go? Well, after he left OnePlus, he started Nothing, another phone brand. And somehow, the story of Nothing is even more wild than OnePlus. Check out this video to learn more. But until then, I'm Hari, and I'll see you guys on the next one.